This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
For the first time in 15 years, and the second time in, what, 45 years? Almost 45 years. The Phillies have a 2-0 series lead in a best of seven. It has been a long, long time since the Phillies followed up one of their now notorious Game 1 wins with a Game 2 win. But here we are. The Phillies held serve at home in the mythical place that is Citizens Bank Park. They lead the National League Championship Series 2-0 over the Arizona Diamondbacks. And everybody's back in Arizona for Game 3, which happens later today. We're recording here on Thursday, October the 19th. My name is Paul Boyer, joined as always by The Athletic's Matt Gelb, who is, of course, on site in Arizona. Matt, how are you? How was your trip?
Really good, Paul. It's hot out here. And it's hotter than it normally is, I guess, this time of year. Like, I've never been out here this time of year. Obviously, I come to Arizona every year, and it's a great place. I actually really do like Phoenix. I think it's a cool city. And it's funny because last night I got into a Lyft to go to a restaurant for dinner with a couple other writers last night. And so the guy picks me up, and I'm like, you know, I asked the guy the question. I was like, hey, is it always this hot here? Like this time of year? He's like, no. He's been a pretty brutal fall for us. And by the way, it was 102 degrees yesterday, and it's going to be
God.
Only 100, I think, today.
Oh, only.
The roof will be closed for Game 3. The guy says, where are you from? And, you know, I usually don't volunteer what I do because I just, it's not that I don't like my job. I love my job. I just don't necessarily like talking about myself or like talking about my job because he mentioned, you know, oh, I write about baseball, and all of a sudden you're getting questions about baseball. And it's like, you know, I don't know. It's not how I want to spend 24 hours of my day, right? So, you know, I said something like, I always just make something up random. I was like, oh, I'm in town, from Pittsburgh. And I think I told him, I was like, I'm in like IT security out here for like a conference or something. And we're driving past the ballpark on the way to the restaurant. And the guy says, you know, like if you're a baseball fan, like there's a playoff game here tomorrow. Like the tickets are like $15. I'm like, oh, really? He's like, yeah. My girlfriend sent me a message this morning. She was like, I just bought us 2 tickets to the Diamondbacks game tomorrow because they were $17 online. And he's like, it's kind of crazy. Like it just seems like, you know, you can just go to a playoff game if you want during the day tomorrow. I was like, oh, okay, cool. That sounds good. So that was, I don't think people are not excited here. Like I can see that there's people that are excited, but, it's certainly not, it's just like not a thing out here. Which is interesting because it's the first time Diamondbacks have been this far, in a long time. And it did happen quite unexpectedly, but I think back to last year, how it happened so unexpectedly. And this time last year, the Phillies were coming home from San Diego, tied 1-1, and it was just, I mean, it was like the world had changed really, like in the span of 3 or 4 weeks, right? I mean, everybody was thinking about the Phillies and talking about baseball again. And that's just, you know, maybe it would be different if the Phillies weren't up 2-0, but in this series, but you win 2 out of 3 here, you take care of business, and you know, you wait to see who you play in the World Series. I won't make it sound simple, but I think we've kind of reached that point, right?
Well, that's the hope. Sure. Yeah. You gotta make sure the Diamondbacks don't use some of this, you know, Cinderella mojo channel, you know, last year's Phillies and surprise everybody. You know, you gotta make sure you keep them pinned in because they're in a bad spot right now. But just real quick before we move on, what's like the best fake job title you've come up with on these stories? Do you do like do you do like Don Draper Mad Men, you know, with Sal in Baltimore kind of thing? Just like they're working for Jimmy Hoffa? No.
No, it's usually like, you know, like IT or like marketing or you know,
just to make sure the subject gets changed.
Again, it's not to say that I don't like what I do. It's just, I don't always like talking about it, right? Like, I don't know.
Sure.
And, I don't know. It's funny. It's funny because a lot, Marcus Hayes was sitting behind me. We all had to, like, when you book postseason travel, it's kind of tough because you're doing it last minute. You're not typically, you know, like, I fly a lot in America and I'm usually sitting in an aisle seat, you know, like near the front.
Sure.
But I was like, I was in the way, way back. Jesse Rogers from ESPN was sitting in row 37, the last row of the plane, right next to the toilet. And he was just laughing the entire flight. Cause I'm in row 36. I keep looking behind him and there's always people standing up next to him. He's just shaking his head. And Marcus Hayes was sitting right behind me and he was in the middle seat between two women. And he has a different approach than I do. Marcus was just like, oh yeah, I'm a sports writer going out to Arizona to cover the Phillies, and that's, he was just talking about like the whole flight, and I was like, God bless Marcus. I just can't do that. I really just can't do that.
Let him be the magnet. that's funny though. No, that's a good idea to come up with. You should come up with something like just a little believably extravagant. I want to workshop this, but we'll get to that later. We'll get to that later.
I'll take suggestions. If listeners want to give me suggestions on what my fake job should be, I'm all ears.
Yeah, there we go. For when we finally eventually launch this Patreon I've been talking about for 5 months, the first Q&A will be, what is Matt's next job on the road trip? Anyway, all right, back to the present tense. The first two games of the NLCS, I don't think could have gone any better. The Phillies took care of business at home. The crowd was into it for 98% of the time. And maybe the 2% that they weren't into it, they were either nervous or the game was 10-0. So you could be forgiven. Everything looks really good right now. Even the outs are being hit hard. The bullpen moves are working. Guys are not getting overtaxed. Wheeler and Nola still look fantastic. Balls flying out of the ballpark. I don't really know what there is to say that isn't positive about the way the first two games went. It is exactly what you wanted this team to do. We thought coming in, they had the matchups, they have the better roster on paper, it's all about execution. Well, they executed the hell out of some baseball in games one and two. And now they have all the power. They are in Arizona for the next three games. Yes, that is true. But the next two games stand to be a different kind of baseball. I won't call it ugly. I'll call it unorthodox maybe, but we're kind of used to this in the playoffs. The next two games for both teams are going to be aggressively matchuped from the pitching side. Bullpen games, in short. And that is more of a problem for Arizona than it is for the Phillies. The Phillies are going to start Taijuan Walker or Ranger Suarez, and then we assume Taijuan Walker in game four, or some kind of mix of Walker, maybe Chris Sanchez. Not entirely sure what things look like for game four just yet. Probably, I think Rob Thompson is holding off on announcing that in case something goes sideways here in game three.
Yeah, and Taijuan Walker threw a bullpen yesterday, which tells me that he will be starting game four.
Okay, there we go. So that locks that in. But the Diamondbacks, for their part, this is where the depth of things starts to get interesting. So the Phillies won the two games against Arizona's best two starting pitchers, who, for their part, really didn't pitch that badly. Things got out of hand in game two when the bullpen came in and the matchups started going their way, and the Phillies just pounced all over them. But Merrill Kelly and Zach Allen did not pitch poorly. They just gave up massive dingers because that's all the Phillies are doing right now. But now things get weird because Brandon Pfaadt, a rookie, who entered the year as one of the top pitching prospects, really, across baseball, you could say. He's a top 100 guy.
Really good prospect.
He's well-regarded. He's been average this year. Even after his recall, he's been, you know, he's been okay. Hasn't been a disaster. He's not expected to go deep into this game. And then game four is just kind of like, I'm not really even sure what's going to happen there from Arizona's side. So, Matt.
Bullpen. Yeah.
You know, yeah, just like it. 2-0 is a really good place to be. But we've seen weird things happen in the playoffs before. And if the Diamondbacks get a little something going, if they it's hard to say you can steal a game when you're playing at home here, but if they manage to steal a game here in these next two, ideally before they go down 3-0, does that make you worry at all about game five and potentially beyond here? Because it's really hard to look at the Phillies' position right now as anything but completely advantageous.
Yeah, I don't know if they drop one game that it makes you worry. I mean, certainly maybe you're going to sweat it a little more, but I would just point to the way they've played. I think with regards to like Gallen, for example, right, in game one, he certainly made some mistake pitches that were the Phillies jumped on. But I think as a whole, like his stuff was a little down. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I mean, he's pitched a lot of innings. He's pitched a ton of innings, more innings than he's ever pitched in a season. And it kind of just reminds me of how some of the Phillies pitchers looked this time last year, right? Think about how, you know, Nola looked in the NLCS last year, just wasn't really the same. I do think that Gallen has sort of reached that point. You know, 210 innings during the regular season, that was almost 30 more than his previous season high. And now he's pitched another 16 in the postseason. Stuff just wasn't the same. So, you know, getting him on 4 days rest in a potential game five again, even if it's in here in Arizona, you still feel pretty good about that. You know, he's a good pitcher, but you also know that he's probably not his best self right now. So that said, I mean, like, remember, you know, what was my prediction when we did the podcast before the series? I was like, I think they're going to split two of the games at home, and then they're just going to come to Arizona and win all three and win in five. And I said that because I believed that the Phillies had the biggest advantage in this series in games three and four. And here they are now after having played two thoroughly solid games at home, and they have huge advantages in these games. Like, I just don't know if the Diamondbacks have anyone to get the Phillies out in game three and game four. Like, even if Fott pitches well, he's probably going through the batting order once, maybe a little more than that. They've talked about like 18 batters. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that, even if he's pitching well, because he just hasn't done that in like weeks now. So they have huge advantages. Now, that said, Paul, I expect the Diamondbacks to like really change their style of play here. They're probably going to push it. They're probably going to be aggressive. If they can, if there's an opening for them to be aggressive, like for example, if Corbin Carroll gets on base in the first inning, he's probably going to try to run, even if it's not a spot where they would, you know, where they might normally run. Like, even if Ranger's a little quicker to the plate than the time that they would use, you know, to send a runner, they might run because they might just want to push it. Because going into the series, like, what did we say? We were like, if the Diamondbacks can create chaos, that is something that really could be a difference maker in a series, because the Phillies are not a team that, you know, catches the ball, you know, with the best of them. They can be exploited in that way. And if the Diamondbacks start to push things on the bases, if they, you know, start to, you know, just put the ball in play and make the Phillies make plays and use their speed and athleticism, like, that is somewhere where they could, you know, that's a weakness where they could try to attack the Phillies. And we have not seen the Diamondbacks do that. And a lot of that is because Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola kept a lot of guys off base for the majority of their starts, and they were tremendous and set the tone for those games. So if the Diamondbacks can get like an early 1-0 lead or something, I expect them to try to be really aggressive, really, really aggressive to try to just push it. You know, Ranger is a great guy to have on the mound in that kind of situation.
Yes, he is.
He typically kills chaos. He is a calming presence on the mound. He throws strikes for the most part, especially his postseason, he's throwing strikes. So, you know, base runners were 7 for 9 against him this year. I'd have to go back and look at all of them. I don't remember, but he's a lefty. He's harder to steal against. He's got a pretty decent pickoff move. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I expect the Diamondbacks to really try to push it, because game three is essentially an elimination game, right?
Yeah, they have to press it. I really wouldn't be surprised, you know. And you're mentioning Ranger and running against him. I was actually looking this up yesterday. There have only been two stolen base attempts against Ranger since the start of September.
Okay,
one was successful. It was Francisco Lindor in a game against the Mets. One was not successful. That was Ozzie Albies being thrown out on the strike him out, throw him out double play.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. Those are the only two guys who have run against Rangers since the start of September. But, I do think it's getting to a point, only two games in, I get it, but it's getting to a point where Arizona really does need to think.
They're just going to try. They're going to take chances. They're going to take more chances, and that's probably what they should do down 2-0.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about coming into this series how athletic the outfield of the Diamondbacks is and how we expect them to make some plays running things down for the most part. And one thing I did not take into account, and I hadn't really known it, I guess, going into it, I hadn't paid this much attention to it, was how, and the broadcast has harped on this multiple times, how below average the throwing arms are out there.
Like,
there's a lot made of the range and the speed, and that is very prevalent, and that makes up for a lot of things. But Thomas and Carroll do not have great arms, and the Phillies are the ones who are pouncing on the base paths on that, who are taking advantage of that, who have had the opportunities to take advantage of that. They have guys on, you know, the coaching and the plans and the advanced scouting and all of this has clicked so well for these first two games that every aspect of it, it's not just that they're hitting these, you know, massive tank shots and getting everybody fired up. Those are amazing. But we saw it in game two. They're just, they have everything figured out right now. And that's really hard to stop.
It's great preparation. I mean, it comes down to the players to execute it. But I think what's great, Paul, is like the coaching staff and the advanced team, they've just found this like this happy medium of like the right amount of information to give to the players. Right, it's not a lot; it's just enough though. So like Kyle Schwarber knows that, you know, the one thing that they told him on the bases is, hey, if it's a single to right, don't be afraid to try to take third base on a single. And I loved, I don't watch the broadcast, obviously, while I'm at the game. Sometimes I'll go back and rewatch some certain innings or certain moments just to see what it looked like on TV, or also just to hear what they were talking about. And I thought Brian Anderson's line about Kyle Schwarber, after Kyle Schwarber went from first to third on that single to right, was pitch perfect. It was so funny. He's like, Kyle Schwarber, just like any good leadoff hitter would do.
Yeah.
He's saying it tongue in cheek, and it's funny. And he's like, going first to third on a single to right. Really funny. And it's just great. It's like those little things, and that's that's why I was like, when I wrote, I mean, call it what it is, I mean, this is dominance like at every level. It's like it's they're doing the things that championship teams do. Like, they just, you know, Trey Turner makes a bad error in the top of the first, then hits a home run in the bottom of the first.
Yeah,
you know, Carroll's on first base because of that error. He didn't even like think about stealing. Like, if you're I watched him almost the rest of that inning, because I'm watching, and he's not even taking a large lead.
No.
He's not even looking like he's going to try. And that's Aaron Nola just being more attentive to detail. You know, it's like Boehm making play after play. It's that Bryson Stott at bat, which me and then your dad agreed was the biggest at bat of the game. And
yes.
I do think it was. I mean, it was just, you know, I know it was just like a kind of a weak single up the middle, wasn't hit hard, but he put it in play against a tough lefty, and that won them the game, because then they got enormous matchup advantages with JT Realmuto against Joe Mantiply. That was probably one of the bigger mismatches we'll see in this series. I don't think it was good managing. And it's like Schwarber going first to third. I mean, like, it's like these little things. It's attention to detail. It's execution. It's just calmness. It's confidence. It is all the little things in October that you're like, this team has got it.
They do. Right now, they absolutely do. And game, you're not going to win every game 10-0. You're not going to score 10 runs, period, every game. But game two is the example of what you need to do and see more of out of this team as this run continues, as they hopefully win, you know, two out of these next five and get to the World Series again. Is you need to take advantage of what the other team gives you. Get those guys home. You got a guy on third with less than two out, you got to get him home. You got guys on second and third, you got to get them home. Like, we need the stuff with runners in scoring position was really frustrating early on. They were winning in spite of that, because mostly because the pitching has been so phenomenal and they've been keeping offenses down and off the board and not retaliating for that. But you got to cash in when you get these opportunities. Right now they're doing that in this series. I look at this is just kind of a random aside, but I'm looking at the series stats page through these first two games. And some of this is
I actually have that up too.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about it. But go ahead. You go first.
Baseball reference is invaluable, always and forever. And some of this is tipped a bit because things got out of hand late in game two and they just started teeing off and the mismatches were there and, you know, mop-up duty was happening, whatever. I'm looking at the two offenses through these two games so far. The Phillies have all nine of their hitters have had at least six at-bats through the first two games, right? They have four guys who have struck out multiple times and three guys who have not struck out at all yet. Alec Boehm has zero strikeouts. Bryson Stott, zero strikeouts. Trey Turner, zero strikeouts. Every single ball he's hit has felt like it's been 110 miles an hour. Everybody on the Diamondback side, that is 2-4, that is seven hitters, have come up with at least six at-bats. This isn't plate appearances, just at-bats. All but one of them have struck out multiple times. Yeah. Gurriel, 4 out of 8. Marte, 3 out of 8. Tommy Pham, 3 out of 8. Gabby Moreno, 2 out of 7. Walker, 4 out of 7. Perdomo, 4 out of 6. The only one who hasn't struck out is Carroll because he's good. But his hit was a broken bat, and the other time he reached was on an error. Like, I'm telling you, everything from these first two games, when you look back, this is paragon postseason baseball. Like, we know it was kind of a mismatch coming in. Okay, fine. It's a little bit of QED. I get it. But the execution on top of the preparation has been flawless. And here's just hoping they keep it going, because I don't really even want to give the Diamondbacks a sniff of things, right? Like, I don't even want them to think, oh, yeah, we can hang in here after all. No, just end this crap, man. Take 2 out of 3 here in Arizona, even if you afford them one game somewhere along the way. I don't really even want to see this come back to Philadelphia, as much as I love these home games so far. Just get it out of the way. Start prepping for the real thing, for the real deal, and actually finishing the job.
Yeah. I mean, the velocity is played just like we thought it would.
Yes.
Diamondbacks have seen, I think it's like 35 pitches at 97, and they have two singles against them and nothing else. And Kirkering, did you watch? Well, I'm sure you watched Kirkering's ninth inning, right?
In yes, game I did. Two? Mm-hmm.
I mean, whoa. Like, I know it was 10-0, but I was like, whoa. Like, some of those sliders were really good, like really good. And, I think he's gotten like one big spot, and that's it in the playoffs. And it's also because they haven't had a ton of spot, you know.
It's true.
They haven't had a ton of chances for it, but he got the game one spot in the LDS, the seventh inning, was a huge spot. He's gotten mostly low leverage since then. I don't think it's because they don't trust him, but I just think because they have other guys they trust more. But man, I don't know, like, some of those sliders were just insane.
Yeah, well, trust has to be growing, you know. The great thing about watching Kirkring is that he absolutely never shows any, he's got the best poker face I think I've ever seen.
He really does.
Just, his expression never changes. It's unbelievable. The most you ever see him do is if he throws a pitch he's not happy with, he takes a three-step walk around the back of the mound, and then he's back up there ready to go. Like, that's it. That's all he's done and shown me so far out there. He's a stone. I think that.
Yeah. And Jeff Hoffman had a really good outing in game two. And I know it wasn't it was kind of a lopsided game, but like the slider was really good. And I think it was really important for him to get back on the mound. He hadn't pitched in a while now and really get that feeling back. I think that was maybe one of the bigger developments for them in that game, to be quite honest with you.
He didn't look rusty at all. Yeah. Like, I mean it when I say that you look up and down this roster and you look at every player through these first two games, it is difficult to find a fault with just about any of them.
Yeah, Rojas is really overmatched at the plate right now. But, like, we're just quibbling, right? But yeah, okay, he's there to catch the ball in center field. Okay. He's really overmatched right now. It reminds me a lot of Stott in last postseason, and the bats aren't as nearly as good as Stott's were last postseason, but he's just like,
he's
just a liability at the plate, but that's already bats nine, and he plays center field, and his center field here at Chase Field, a big outfield, will be refreshing. I think the Phillies have always had problems here in the outfield defensively, because it is a difficult place to play. It's so big out there. Mm-hmm. Rojas will be an asset in these games here in Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. He hasn't he hasn't been great up there, but he has only struck out twice in his 8 at bats. So
yeah, he's 2 for 29 in the postseason with 11 strikeouts.
Yeah, that's not ideal. And you'd like to see that click in, hopefully, if they advance to the next round where it's not a black hole at the bottom. But again, that's not what he's here for. He's
correct.
Now, and it's all right, fine. All right, good. So that's the one thing. That is the
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, I guess that's, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I can't really think of anything else. Like, is there anything else? I mean, I don't know. Like, Stott has just been okay, but that one at bat in game two was terrific. It was a big at bat. Marsh has taken some really good at bats from them. I don't know. Trey Turner's defense, like, you know.
No,
kind of scares you every a little bit every time a ball is hit his way. He'll mostly make the plays, but just a little shaky over there. They're in a great spot, and you just watch I don't know how much of the ALCS game you watched last night, but the Rangers and Astros are both really good, but they also they have very obvious and apparent flaws, both teams.
Yes.
I'm not saying the Phillies are flawless, because they're not, but both the Rangers and the Astros have flaws, and the pitching situation for both those teams in game four tonight is not good. And I just don't want to get we're at the cocky side of the cocky distraught meter,
but
you just start looking at it realistically and rationally, and you're like let's not dance around it. I mean, the Phillies, I think right now, are the favorites to win a World Series.
They're the best team playing right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you can ask anybody.
And it's uncomfortable to say that, because, like,
yes, it is.
You know, you don't want to, you know, but call it what it is. I mean, that is what they are right now.
Yes.
And the quicker they can cast aside, you know, a team that is good, but not as good as them, and just really recharge and refocus for what could be an incredible World Series. I mean, it's all there for them. It is all there. It is right there. All there, right in front of them. And I think they have big advantages here in Game 3 and Game 4. I think Taijuan Walker probably gets, like, you know, 9-ish batters in Game 4, maybe a little more if they're up 3-0 and he's pitching well. I do think Christopher Sanchez could factor into that game, but maybe not. Maybe it's like Walker and then Matt Strom, and then some of your leverage guys, depending on the situation. But they will push Rangers tonight. Like, it's not going to be, you know, like that the first game in the Braves series. I mean, because you potentially will play 3 games in 3 days here, you'd really like to push Ranger. Diamondbacks will make some changes to their lineup, it sounds like. I don't quite know what they'll be. I mean, because Ranger is a lefty.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I should go back and look, but I don't know what their lefty versus left lineup. Maybe Alec Thomas is not playing center field tonight. Or maybe Jordan Lawler is playing shortstop. I don't know. But
that would make sense to me.
Ranger, I mean, as good of a third starter as there is in the playoffs. I mean, look at last night. The third starters were Max Scherzer, who hadn't pitched in like 6 weeks, and who started for the Astros. I can't remember now.
Christian Javier.
Christian Javier, who was like up and down all year, right? And had a good start, but. I mean, Ranger is like, he's the best third starter left right now, which is amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's very weird to talk this way, because I'm not used to this team, and I was certainly not prepared for this team to assume the role of pretty clear and obvious favorite. Like, if that's even the right word, reaching the LCS, they are playing the best. It is hard to say that any of the other three teams, you certainly can't say the Diamondbacks are playing better than them right now. And it's hard to really say that either the Rangers or Astros are necessarily playing better. That's kind of a subjective argument to have, but whatever. Like, the Phillies are playing great, and it's unusual to be in this position. And I just hope there's more of it. You know, you keep waiting. I keep waiting. In the very back of my head, it's a small voice these days, which is great. I keep waiting for like another shoe to drop. Like, I keep waiting for something weird to happen, just because I'm so used to weird things happening. Not in the good way necessarily. This has been weird in a good way, and an almost exclusively good way. And I would like more of that, to keep that voice in the back of my mind, you know, shrunk and belittled and back in its cage. Cause I just want to keep enjoying this. These last 2 years have been so much fun. that I don't want to be in the position where I'm thinking like, oh yeah, okay, but now what's going to happen? Because it doesn't seem like it should. There's nothing pointing me towards saying the Phillies are on the brink of collapse right now. It's just the way I've been conditioned to watching this team for 30 years.
It's going to take years and years of therapy to fix that. But in some ways they've been lucky. Like they haven't faced a ton of adversity this postseason, but in a lot of ways you create your own luck. Paul, they have walked 15 batters in 71 innings this postseason.
It's beautiful.
15. Do you know how many walks the Orioles had in 3 postseason games this year in 26 innings?
How many?
They had 18 walks. The Phillies have a 1.39 ERA as a team in 8 postseason games this year.
It's wild. Against good offenses, against the best offense in the league. Arizona's no slouch.
It's insane.
Miami, but that's 2 games, whatever.
Opponents are batting 174 against the Phillies this playoffs. It's just insane.
It's wild.
Every way you look at it, like all these different marks that they've set for postseason dominance, like your eyes kind of glaze over as you see some of them. But like these are marks that are almost like inconceivable, like 15 home runs in a 4-game span. I mean, all these things, you're like, the only appropriate reaction to this is essentially laughter. I mean, like there's just no other way to react because it's not supposed to. And I'm not saying it's been easy, but it's not supposed to be look this smooth or this machine-like in October, because these are stressful games, intense games, and you're not supposed to be able to play this well, this dominant this time of year.
No,
and they are.
No. All right. So here's the thing. This will be as devil's advocate as I will get. I would expect Arizona to come out with a lot of life tonight. If they don't, the series is over. I just think.
By the way, there's going to be a ton of Phillies fans in the stands tonight. By the way,
oh, yeah.
Just FYI.
There were like some grassroots things and people, you know, actually thinking about flying out there because really, and I don't. This isn't necessarily a good thing, but the ticket price plus a flight to get to Arizona and a place to stay was like comparable to just getting in the door at CBP. Like, and that's. It's a little ridiculous. I would hope more people would be able to get in and see this environment, this atmosphere in Philadelphia, because it's amazing and it should not be restricted to people who can pay $500 a ticket.
Yeah.
Different discussion. I'm glad that there are people who are able to get out there in Arizona. I'm sure we're going to hear some cheers. And that's just another thing added into the mix, right? You know, it's microcosmically, I like using that word, encapsulated by that driver that you were talking about. It's like, oh, do you know there was a playoff game going on? You know, my girlfriend said we can get in for $15 a pop. And it's just like, I know we in Philadelphia, in the Philadelphia area and the Philadelphia fan, you know, diaspora, just treat sports differently, right? Like I get that. It's not always just, we're not the paragons of sports fandom. We treat it differently. There's a lot of attention being paid. And I just think, you know, it... Every little bit of that is an advantage, and they just need to keep seizing on that. And if they get a little bit of home field taste out there in Arizona, then that's that much better. All right, Matt, I think we've said all we need to say. Last 2 games are in the past. Moving forward, they know what they need to take care of. Any passing thoughts as we get ready for these next 3 games out here in Arizona?
My Kyle Schwarber NLCS MVP pick looks solid.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And I'm right there with you with Trey. He hasn't struck out yet. He's hitting the ball a million miles an hour.
God, he hasn't struck out yet in the first 2 games?
Wow. No, 2 walks. So we're neck and neck. Everybody's in the mix on the offensive side.
Do you have one specific prediction for tonight?
I think this is the game where the Diamondbacks score a few runs. I think they get at least 4. I think the Phillies are going to need to really tee off on Fott and the rest of the bullpen, which, hey, you got every reason to believe they can. But I think this is where the Diamondbacks show a little bit of life. And I think the Phillies are going to need to keep up with them this time rather than simply outsprint them. How about you? What are you feeling for tonight?
I think Orion Kerkering gets a save tonight.
Gets a save tonight. Ooh. I can get down with that. Yeah, his last outing was so good. I could see.
I think somehow maybe there's just a point where they got to bring Kimbrel in the 8th, and I don't know why. It's very too specific almost. Maybe I should say that I think Orion Kerkering pitches the 9th, but yeah, something like that, something along those lines. I think he's going to get Might get a big spot tonight.
Cool. All right. I can get down with that. Next three games, potentially, out in Arizona. Ranger Suarez has the bump tonight against rookie Brandon Pfaadt for the D-backs. Friday, we assume Taiwan Walker gets the start, and then we'll see what happens. And then Arizona's side is just going to be, well, whoever you're facing at any given moment.
Johnny Holstaff.
Yeah, Johnny Holstaff. There you go. Tonight starts at 5 o'clock Eastern, 2 o'clock out there in Arizona. So thank you.
Beautiful all start time. Beautiful. Yeah. For me, out here at 2 o'clock, baby. I love
it. Yeah, I'm sure. Thank you, everybody, again, for listening. We'll check back with you again. Maybe the series is over by the next time we chat. We'll see what happens. Either way, enjoy these next couple of days. Hopefully the Phillies keep this going, because this is just a little bit too much fun right now. So for Matt, I am Paul. Go Phillies.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.